This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
Apparently somebody's fired up for the show today. Hey, how you doing? This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff coming to you from the FedEx Studios.
Solly, back from Calcutta.
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
That is personal business. That is something for me to know and you to never find
out.
When
I hear you're from you went to Calcutta and back, there has to be a good reason why, and it doesn't matter if it's personal or not. You have to say why you went to Calcutta.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
Based on what standards? Based on what bylaws do I have to say why I was there?
Because it'll be a good story for the show. And we have an hour to fill because it's just the two of us.
I know. Steve and Third Mike Dan had prior commitments tonight. They will be back next week on the show, we hope. That's just the funky way the schedules go. Who knows when... That's just the funky way that our schedules work out.
Funky way, okay.
Yeah. That's just the way the schedules work out. Who knows who's going to be available.
You almost made the list there, Matt.
Yeah, I know, but thankfully I haven't made Chris Jericho's list this week yet.
He'll still be there because he's the champion, apparently. Yeah.
No, he is the U.S. champion, but that's now over on SmackDown, not on Raw. And he might not be defending the title for a while because I heard Fozzy's going on tour.
Which is surprisingly odd that he got the title.
I know. I thought they would have let KO keep it and then have him go on tour for a while, then go back after it.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we still got plenty to talk about on the show today. Since the last episode of the show, you guys didn't talk much about what's going on in the rest of the sports world.
Danny and Steve just went all to the wall
on the draft.
The first round of the draft, yes.
Yeah, so they did that. They got in a little bit about what happened in the rest of the sports world, but that's why we fill in the gaps. We'll take care of the rest of the sports world.
I thought the mini rants were supposed to fill in those gaps.
I know, but unfortunately, I don't know why they don't do them. The reason I don't do them as much is because I'm busy most of the time and I don't have time usually to get something prepared accurately. Trust me, I'm trying my best to get more of the mini rants.
You know, it's just supposed to be a rant. It doesn't matter how informative you are.
Well, I know,
it is important, but at least it gives off your basic carnal rage
about
a certain thing. That's what mini rants are for.
I realize that, but unfortunately, due to one of my jobs, I'm not able to look as much as I'd like to.
Then just rant and give it to me, and I'll edit it for you.
Again, I usually don't have time to do that stuff because I'm running around a million different places. Give me time. I promise I'll get out more mini rants and more blog posts. SSonsports.blogspot.com. We'll try to get out as much info as possible. And here's to hoping that my other two cohorts on this show will actually join me and help do some of this stuff. Because it's been all me lately. It's been taking care of any of that stuff that gets that done. Not to bash them, but I would just like a little bit of help from it.
I think someone's getting a little bit on the haterade.
Nah.
We got a couple of haters.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry. I'll have more haterade to spew later
on. Couple haters.
A little delayed reaction with that. I'll give you that. But I'll have more haterade to spew later on for the NBA playoffs, possibly. Stick around for that. We'll get into the NHL playoffs. We'll get into Major League Baseball. All of that's coming up. Since the guys beat to death the draft last week, I don't see a point to go into it further now.
I mean, we could talk a little bit about, just quickly mention that the Giants finally, I don't say finally because they've been drafting a couple quarterbacks throughout the tenure of Eli Manning.
But it's almost, what's the point? Unless Eli gets hurt or dies, he's not going to give up the starting job.
But again, the whole thing that was discussed about before we knew the Giants were going to get a quarterback was how much longer does Eli have in him to be a quarterback in the NFL?
I'd probably say 2 to 3, 2 years, maybe three tops. That's about how long Eli has,
so
honestly.
Why not get a quarterback to groom him?
That's what I thought they
It's not like with Nassib where he's already gone, probably.
Yeah.
And also, like, with the previous ones, when you needed just a backup, but this time you could see the window is closing, so...
But that's possibly why I think they brought in Geno Smith. I mean, most people...
No, Geno Smith is not the quarterback of tomorrow for the Jets.
I realize... Wait, for the
Giants,
Jets?
Sorry,
thank
Giants.
You. But and trust me, I'm very well aware of that, but that's possibly why they brought in Geno as maybe... Sort of what they had with Nassib is a possible placeholder as a backup, just in case, God forbid, anything happens to Eli. They have a quarterback there on the roster.
Yeah, he'll be
Eli. Now, granted, Geno's in no way, shape, or form the next coming of Eli Manning to take over that team. That's not happening.
No,
there's no way. But I think they're using him sort of as a placeholder until they can find a capable, competent quarterback to be able to take over for Eli.
My view is that Geno will be the number two no matter what happens.
Right.
Who is the kid's name that got drafted for the Giants as quarterback?
From
Cal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. Give me a second to look.
Yeah. You draft him just so you can get experience. Probably, I don't know if practice squads have quarterbacks at all.
Yeah, most of them do.
So let him learn in the practice squad, you know, just to get the whole idea about reads and all that stuff. You know, do well during training camp.
The quarterback's name they took with the 87th pick in the third round was Davis Webb out of California.
Okay, Davis Webb.
Yep.
Let Davis learn in the practice squad. Let him get some good snaps and good reps during training camp. I know I'm speaking it backwards, but that's just how my mind is thinking.
Yeah, and I understand completely.
And look, if Geno's hurt, then you bring him.
Then you have something there.
It's a decent depth. I mean, don't have Webb on the actual roster. Put him on the practice squad
again,
and let him learn from the book for a year and let him practice his mechanics.
That's why they have practice squads, is to be able to make sure that the primary players on the rosters are going to be ready for each week's game, and the guys who are on the practice squad.
I feel like this is a no dust statement, but go ahead, Matt.
Could be signed to the main roster just in case something happens.
And what's your opinion though on the Jets now, quickly?
Well, with the Jets, I think they addressed what they needed to with the first pick, taking Allen out of LSU.
Fell to them.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to be able to take the best available player. That's a given. If he's there, take him. And the Jets, I think, the last time they drafted an offensive player in the opening round of the draft was Mark Sanchez. I know I'm dating myself a little here, but that's what they needed to do. They needed the best available player, and they got him. But the problem is, they didn't address too many of their other needs after the fact.
They have just too many problems.
I realize that. I mean, they got the first two picks were safeties. Jamal Adams out of LSU and Marcus May out of Florida. They didn't pick again until 79 when they got it. The next two picks were wide receivers. Ardarius Stewart out of Alabama and Chad Henson out of Cal. They took another tight end with Jordan Leggett in the fifth round. Got a defensive end from West Georgia and Donahoe, excuse me. They got Eli McGlure and took another cornerback. They got no quarterback help.
Good.
You
got to say that is good for the Jets. They did not go for another quarterback.
Because they've already got two on the roster. They got three on the roster.
Yes.
They got McCown, they got Hackenberg, and they got Petty. And I think as far as the quarterback is concerned, they want to see what they have with that position.
It's the right move.
Exactly, and I agree with it being a good move by the Jets.
And from what I've seen on TV and what I've heard on radio is that next year's draft is going to be very quarterback-friendly.
Which would be a good reason why the Jets didn't take a QB this year, because it's twofold. They could see what they have on the roster now and see which of the three guys could they potentially build around at that position long-term. And if Jets management feels that the quarterback to build this team around is not here, they have the experiment for next year with the quarterback-heavy draft in 2018.
And since they're going to play, it looks like a lot of rookies or second-year players, I should say.
There you go.
You would think that the Jets are not going to fare well in the regular season.
No, I mean,
leading them to at least a top five
10,
pick.
I'd say top 10. No, top 10 pick easily. Top 5,
yeah,
maybe.
You can pencil them in for a top 10 pick.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt.
They have a great chance, I would say, just from what the outlook is for a
top five. Now, again,
and you can stop interrupting me,
yeah,
Matt.
Thank
you very much.
I know. There's no way to be able to accurately predict how well the Jets are going to do now, because there's no way to be able to see what the roster is going to look like between now and the season opener. But that's why we wait for the NFL preview show before we predict how well each team's going to do.
Yes.
So, chances are you're right. The Jets are going to get a top five, definitely a top 10 pick. But only time's going to be able to tell whether this team's going to dive bomb or they're going to do fairly well. You never know. They could surprise a few people.
And since we haven't heard your reaction, like, what do you think was the craziest move or the dumbest move or the most surprising move?
The Bears moving up one spot to get Mitch Trubisky. Because that could end up meaning one of two things. It could end up meaning either the Chicago Bears are geniuses for moving up the one pick, because originally the second pick was the Niners. They and the Bears flopped the 2 and 3 picks and knew GM of the Niners, John Lynch, could turn out to be a genius. That's the other side of the coin.
Many are saying that the 49ers fleeced
Chicago
the Bears
out of it. Again, yeah. there's There's no way to be able to accurately tell a couple of days after the draft. Not happening.
That's just your philosophy. So.
No. To be able to accurately tell how well the player's going to be in the NFL or how good a draft class
but you
was.
Know, but you know that
you gotta wait
people
five
need the
years.
Hot take.
No, I realize that's the hot take. But to be able to, at least from where I sit, to be able to make an accurate judgment as to how well a team did in the draft, you got to give it time to see how well players develop in the NFL. And there is a distinct possibility that Mitchell Trubisky could be the franchise quarterback for the Chicago Bears. There is that theory and that possibility that that could happen. But at the same time, Mitch Trubisky could turn out to completely dive bomb, be a flame out in less than 5 years in the NFL, and the picks that the Niners made that they got from that trade with the Bears could make John Lynch, the GM, look like a complete genius. There's no accurate way to tell now in the beginning of May.
And I know I read
it's May 2nd
that Chicago got some picks back when they did some trading with Arizona.
They did.
So it's not like the Bears, you know, were left like, oh my God, what do we do? It seems like they recuperated.
They did. They were able to come up with something at least to compensate for making the trade with the Niners. But while everybody's been talking about this, something else that I feel the need to bring up, and I promise we'll break down more baseball later on, but this has to be talked about.
Yes, it does.
The stupidity of some fans at Fenway Park Monday night, and this was, I believe, about the sixth inning of the game between the Orioles and the Red Sox at Fenway.
It doesn't really matter where in the game this happened.
But Adam Jones is playing left field for Baltimore, and during the course of the game, he's in the outfield, mind you, the Red Sox are hitting, and some fan threw a bag of peanuts at him while he's in the field and was dumb enough to actually yell out for all to hear the N-word.
Yeah, racial epithets, throwing peanuts out. And when you look into this issue more and more, you realize that apparently this is commonplace in Fenway Park among a small number of Boston fans that just can't seem to help themselves.
Right. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not just limiting this to Red Sox fans. There are fans for every team and every single sport that have their moments of, how should I put this, idiocy. Where fans say and do stupid things. Now, I don't want to paintbrush the entire Red Sox fan base for this one idiot. And apparently, supposedly he was drunk when he said this. From what I had heard, when the police escorted him out of Fenway Park last night, or Monday night, I should say, he was intoxicated. So that should play some sort of a role in it right there. But the fact that some people go so far as to paint the entire Red Sox fan base as idiots because of one stupid person's comment, that's a bit much.
Well, here's some things that you got to know, Matt.
Okay.
Here's some tweets from Eric Bolin. And
who is he?
He's a reporter, I believe, but he got some quotes out of CeCe Sabathia about this.
All right.
So, a couple tweets. Sabathia says he experienced what Adam Jones did in Boston, though not since he's been with the Yankees because their security presence in Penn. So basically, like, the security when the Yankees were all around is much higher, so CeCe doesn't experience it, but he has experienced that in Boston.
Right.
Two, Sabathia said in his big league career, I've never been called that anywhere but in Boston.
Okay.
And the third tweet posted out, Sabathia said, it's talked about among black major leaguers. We know. A quote, we know. There are 62 of us. We all know. When you go to Boston, you expect it.
All right, so that proves that
even though that's not verbatim, I messed up on that. But
no, that's completely fine, but anybody following that train of thought will get what's being said by CeCe Sabathia. It goes to prove that, yeah, there's idiots in sports. There's never going to be a denial of that, but what still boggles my mind is that there's people out there that are dumb enough to actually say this in 2017. I mean, come on, don't you think we live in an age today where stuff like that shouldn't exist anymore? I mean, forget about the fact that this is coming in the realm of sports. Let's just think about this on life in general.
Okay, so you also have 34 ejections on that game.
All right. What, in the crowd?
Yeah.
All right.
Even though there's typically 12 to 15 fan ejections. So basically the fan ejections doubled because of that. I don't know if it was a direct result or not, but it just went in the reports. And also you have Red Sox players going to management talking about this now.
Yeah, and supposedly, according to one article I'm reading, Adam Jones said that they're simply removing abusive fans from the ballpark is not enough. He called for steeper fines, and I quote, "They need to fine them $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, something that really hurts somebody. Make them pay in full, and if they don't, take it out of their checks," unquote. And again, I'm paraphrasing that. That's from Adam Jones after the incident on Monday. I'm like, that to a degree, that makes sense. Either that or just ban those people from the ballpark. You don't need that kind of stupidity anymore.
No, it really doesn't. But it's just the culture. I don't want to say all of Boston culture, because I went to school in Boston.
Right, and I have family that live in Boston.
And I really haven't experienced that just from where I was positioned in Boston. But
right.
But you know that there are areas in Boston where if you grow up in that culture, you will mold into that culture.
Yeah,
you will become part of that culture, and you will do what that culture basically says or whatnot.
It's upbringing mostly, and people are taught to think that way. I really wish that stuff like that wasn't in existence anymore, but that's the sad reality of it.
I mean, it's also like if you go to rural America where you really don't have a lot of cultural diversity,
right?
And you basically have one type of culture, and you're grown up to not really know how to handle or deal with any other ethnicities. So you basically are raised by parents about what these other ethnicities are about, and usually it's not that good, so
no.
You tend to grow up like that. So it's sort of the same situation. It's like they're not bad people, it's just what they're growing into.
Exactly.
But the things here in Boston with throwing peanuts, it's two things. One, the culture.
Yeah.
But if you're really throwing peanuts and keep on saying it to every single black player or every single African-American or Dominican-American or someone of that color,
yeah,
you are a bad person. You've grown up with some very vitriol type of
stupidity.
Gumption.
That's saying a lot. I really would. I mean, it sucks that this kind of has to happen, but at least now people are more aware of it, and hopefully this could be a wake-up call to some sections of Boston and most of the people in this country.
They're not going to wake up and say, oh my God, we should change this.
I realize that, but
they're going to backtrack and say, this is who we are, and it doesn't make it right, but it's who we are. I can't change who I am. This
yes, you can. It's possible people can change. It's entirely
it's possible.
But
it's like, you know, it's just, again, the upbringing, the same thing of if you're born into your father being a wife beater, you have a greater chance to become a wife beater yourself.
Right.
Which sucks.
It does. And we're not condoning any of that by any stretch of the imagination.
Why would we?
Right. But we're just using that as kind of an example, you know?
Of course.
I wasn't addressing you directly. You get what I mean.
Yes, Mr. Obvious.
Yeah, I know. Captain Obvious is in full force today. So, yeah, that's some of the stupidity that's happening in Boston. Hopefully, though, on a lighter note, the Boston Celtics can change some of the thinking in the area. They've moved on to the second round after
getting a
scare in the playoffs.
Yeah, first two games, they just look like dead fish, and then after that, just run off four straight.
Yep, and now they've got
the Washington Wizards.
Isaiah Thomas rolling again in game one of the Celtics-Wizards series. 33 points and a 123-111 win in game one. And looking back at the regular season, Boston and Washington split the regular season series. And I know what happens in the regular season doesn't necessarily mean jack squat come playoff time.
If you're a bona fide playoff contender, that is true.
But it's worth noting that of the four meetings between Boston and Washington during the regular season, they played in November 9th, January 11th, January 24th, and March 20th. All four games were won by the home team, and Boston being the home team in the series took game one. So could that trend potentially continue throughout the series? If it does, it favors the Celtics in seven games. But with the way Isaiah Thomas has been playing, and especially with the way he played against Chicago over the entire course of the series, Isaiah Thomas is really starting to establish himself as, I'll go so far as to say, one of the premier power forwards or one of the premier forwards in the NBA. I could be wrong and completely misreading that, but Isaiah Thomas is starting to establish himself as a big-time player in this league.
And you know what?
What?
They have a good chance of getting the number one pick.
Yes, they do.
So this is not the ceiling for the Celtics team at all, for the Celtics team. They, no matter what happens, I mean, yes, it seems like they are on the trajectory to meet whoever wins the Toronto-Cleveland series in the conference finals.
Which, in all likelihood, it's probably going to be Cleveland.
I mean, if you saw the game one, you can say, wow, there is no way Cleveland is not making it to the conference finals.
But that's been a given, I think, since the start of the year, that Cleveland was going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals and, hell, even the NBA Finals.
Yeah, you could say that. But Boston's glass ceiling has not even been reached.
No. And it's not just Isaiah Thomas that showed up in game one. He had 33 points, sure, but you get 21 points out of Al Horford in about 35 minutes of playing time. Same thing as far as length of playing time for Jay Crowder, and he dropped 24 points. So you're getting 20 points or higher from three of your five starters if you're the Boston Celtics.
And how's the bench?
Let's see. We had 12 from Kelly Olynyk, and he was the only one to hit double digits coming off the bench for Boston in game one.
But they're all even out. They're all productive.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to say, because I don't have the stats in front of me. You do.
Yeah, I know. All of them have been productive. All of them produced at least 2 points coming off the bench. You had, at least as far as Washington's concerned, sure, you got 27 from Bradley Beal. And you got, 18 out of Otto Porter Jr., 16 out of Gorat. You got production from Washington, but they were outplayed by the better team in the Celtics. But, you know, and this debate was brought up on another radio show earlier today. Had to do with playoff seeding. Look at what Cleveland did in game one. That wasn't even close between Cleveland and Toronto.
Toronto had a hard time beating the Milwaukee Bucks, for goodness sakes.
Yes, they did. But
they blew a lead in the game six. They had a 25-point lead.
And they blew it.
But they were able to come to show their resolve and persevere through it.
Which, by the way, is a statement that the Milwaukee Bucks are close to being a major player in the Eastern Conference.
Yes, but besides that,
right,
it also shows that Toronto has a lot of problems right now.
Yes, they do.
And facing off against the Cleveland Cavaliers for the second straight year, this time in the second round, last year in the conference finals,
yep,
they got no chance, it seems like, just from the outlooks of what we saw in the first round and in this first game.
And it was a well-rested Cleveland team, mind you, because Cleveland had about a week off. They swept in the first round.
Good for LeBron.
Exactly. And this was the debate. Again.
Is this another LeBron debate?
Wasn't started by me, but somebody else was making that on the radio earlier today, that the time off was good for LeBron and...
Okay, that's no debate. That's just true. That is just absolutely true. The miles that guy has put on, as we stated over and over this past year, that's true.
Yeah, I know. So the NBA should try to stretch out the schedule a little more and start the season earlier instead of waiting until Halloween.
Yeah, but that's besides the point.
Well, somebody else had made this argument, and I want your take on it. I'll give mine as well. But why not give more incentive on reaching a higher seed? So that way players might not take a night off. You know how...
I don't know how you can do that,
though. Here's the argument. They gave more incentive on winning the division in Major League Baseball by adding the second wild card team. And you're guaranteed a longer playoff series if you win the division versus getting the two wild card spots, because it's one and done with the wild card game in baseball. So now with the NBA, somebody made the suggestion today of giving maybe the one and two seeds a first round bye in the NBA playoffs.
First off, you're not... You would have to add more playoff teams.
I get that, but again, it was
which
just
means
a suggestion that was
the
made.
No, because then it's like you have to readjust the whole playoff series structure. You have to do some play-in games. Is that going to be a best of one, or is that going to be a best of three? Is that going to be a best of five?
I don't see how it's going to work, but that's at least an idea that's being thrown around, other than just everybody whining and complaining about it. At least somebody came up with the idea for it.
I mean, first off, you have over half the league with 16 teams going into the playoffs.
Right.
So, and now you're going to add, what, more mediocre teams just to throw in the dance so they can be cannon fodder for the upper echelon of the Golden State, the San Antonio Spurs, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Boston Celtics? No.
It's diluting the product, basically.
Yeah. You don't want that.
No. So then go with what we had suggested, at least come up with something different, maybe start the season earlier so that way players aren't gassed by the end of the year.
Yeah, and the other idea is cutting some games to the regular season, but again, that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen for money reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
The NBA is making too much money off TV rights.
I would actually agree about starting the regular season a little bit later.
Or you mean earlier in the month?
Ending it later.
What?
Starting earlier.
Thank you.
Both. Why not both?
Do it a week earlier
and a week later.
Well, do what the NHL does. Start the season early October, end it early April, and then run parallels through the playoffs. Because hockey's already in the middle of the second round.
But we're not, yeah. We get
NBA's just starting round two. So why not push everything up in basketball earlier?
Whatever. I don't even want to think about that.
I'm just basing that off an argument I heard earlier today, and I wanted your take on it. I agree. I think it's stupid giving teams a first round bye. Just start the season earlier, and you'll stretch it out a little bit longer, and it'll give your players more rest. So that way fans can kind of feel like they're getting their money's worth more by watching certain players.
Exactly.
So we got Toronto getting bushwhacked by Cleveland. How about the fact that Houston completely, I'll flat out say it, bitch slapped San Antonio in game one?
126-99, correct?
That wasn't even close. Did you see the score by halftime?
No. That was the final. 126-99.
Yeah, that was the final. But San Antonio was down by 40 points at the half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 69-39 by halftime. Favor of Houston. San Antonio had 16 points in the second quarter. Sure, Kawhi Leonard had a double-double, 21 points and 11 rebounds.
That doesn't matter when you get blown up like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Double-doubles and triple-doubles don't mean jack squat. Look at what happened to Giannis Antetokounmpo in round one with Milwaukee. He pretty much averaged like a double-double every night. Didn't matter. Because Milwaukee got blown out. Same thing with what Kawhi Leonard did for San Antonio. Now, I'm not totally sold yet on Houston. Game one certainly started to change my opinion a little bit more. That, okay, maybe Houston's not going to be a pushover for San Antonio in this round. And we might not have that dream matchup again in the West Finals between San Antonio and Golden State. So, there is the possibility that Houston could be reestablishing themselves
a threat.
As a threat. Yeah.
I mean, the way they played this season, the way that Harden's been playing throughout the whole regular season, and the way that the team has been running in all cylinders and not relying on one player, like their first-round opponent, the Oklahoma City Thunder, were like, that team is definitely a force to be reckoned with and not to be taken lightly, which I know San Antonio doesn't do, but
right.
But it seems like something went wrong there in that first game where San Antonio just was completely just outdone in every facet.
I mean, sure, James Harden dropped 20 points in 31 minutes on the court.
But when you can just have equal contribution from every player
on
the court.
And that's starting to show, though, I think, a sign of the times for San Antonio in that, yes, they are still a very good team, and yes, they're one of the elites still in the Western Conference. They're not at that same level they once were when they had the likes of Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili going in full health. Ginobili barely played, I think, in this
game.
Then
again, it's just game one, and we'll see how this happens.
Right,
out.
That's why it's a best-of-seven series instead of a one-and-done.
Well,
done,
man,
like,
we don't need to state the obvious.
Yeah,
again.
I know. I mean, yeah, you got Tony Parker, who dropped 11 points, and you got Jonathan Simmons coming off the bench with 11 for San Antonio, but still, that's not enough against a team that's as well-balanced as Houston.
No, and there's one series that hasn't started yet, as of this recording, is the Golden State Warriors versus the Utah Jazz.
Who would have thought Utah was going to pull that out over Lob City in the first round?
Well, that means one thing, is that it's time to break up the Clippers.
I know.
That whole experiment or that whole team is done.
Pretty much. I mean, there'd been rumblings that there was going to be severe changes made to the Clippers going into the year. That by the end of the season, something had to give. Whether it be Blake Griffin, CP3, or DeAndre Jordan leaving Lob City. There have been rumors floating around like crazy all year that something might happen. Now the fact that they got knocked off by the Jazz in the first round, Utah winning it in seven,
yep,
there's a distinct possibility that they go bye-bye.
Yeah, it's just what happens. Just underperformed for the past few seasons in the playoffs. You think you have a pretty stable team, but no, you don't. Somehow, Rivers isn't doing his job well.
Well, you don't know whether it's coming from Doc Rivers or team manager Dave Wall. He's got a say in this, too, I believe. Same way Phil Jackson does with the Knicks. I know I'm comparing apples and oranges here.
Now, I really haven't followed the Clippers. I don't know if you have either.
Not as
because,
well.
Because I just want to know if you ever heard rumblings that if the Clippers have been managed somewhat this or like are considered the Knicks of the West. That's the thing. Like, we could say for any team, is it the coach or is it management's decision, stuff like that.
Or if it's even the players not performing up to snuff, because coaches and management, and I've made this argument in any sport, and you can make that argument in any sport, that maybe it's the coaches, maybe it's management. Do you ever stop to think that maybe it's the players? Because they're either not buying into the system, they're not healthy, whatever the reason.
Well, if the players aren't buying into the system, then it's the coach's fault.
How is it the coach's fault, though? Explain that logic to me. How is it the coach's fault?
It's sort of like when a coach tries to implement a system, and the players just fall on deaf ears, and they're just not responding to the coach.
So
the coach isn't there. You got to get another coach that will rally them.
Either that or get rid of the players.
If it happens a lot where... Yeah, there comes a point, though, like, if you keep on hiring coaches and the players don't listen, then, yeah, it's the players.
Right.
I understand that. But...
But then again...
Not looking good for the Clippers.
I know. There is the possibility of a rebuild because after...
I feel like there is.
Because after a while, certain teams run their course, they have their level of success, and then it just kind of fades out. And once the level of success starts to fade out...
They plateaued, and it's all done.
Right, so either change the coaching staff and see if the new system will respond to the players. If that don't work, get rid of some of the players. I mean, granted, that's the easy answer from where we're sitting. We're sitting here in a recording studio talking about it.
Either you trade some good player, like at least one or two good players for a draft pick and, you know, not do a full hard reset. You know, it just depends. It's really tough to think about it.
Right. And again, it's easier
said
than
done.
So many
choices, yeah.
Because, like I said, it's easier for us to do it. We're not doing any of the money dealings that involve with running a professional franchise.
Yeah.
Because if we were, we'd be doing that instead of this.
Of course. We'd all be, both of us would be rich.
I know.
Making some serious dough managing teams.
I know, but is that either one of us? No.
Yeah, we're just here in my basement just talking about sports as best as we can.
Yeah, with what we have to work with. But you know what, though? That's part of the fun about what we do. Where else do we get to talk sports and have a good time doing it?
Yeah, I'm thinking where else? I don't know.
There are a few places, but we're not going to get into that now.
Where we eat good in the neighborhood?
Da-da-ch! Free plug for them.
I just said a phrase, not the actual name.
No, I know.
Don't know what you're talking about, Matt. I don't know what place you're saying.
I'm not going to get into that now. If they or anybody else would like to sponsor us... SSNSports@gmail.com or SollySteveOnSports@gmail.com.
There you go. We got to figure out the password, though.
how can we... I know you guys talked about this on Friday.
Because it's Brendan's account.
Why, though? Why can't he just hand everything over to either you or me? Since you and I do most of the work on social media anyway.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
So that's it. Brendan, if you're somehow listening to this, get on that and hand it over to us. If not, we'll take it ourselves.
So let me see. Who do I think is going to go in the conference finals? I can't go out on a limb.
For which conference, West or East?
Both. I can't go out of a limb on the Eastern Conference.
It's going to be Boston and Cleveland.
Yep. I can't see it any other way.
No.
And I can't see Golden State.
There's no way Golden State
is going to lose.
Not to Utah. No way. If it had been
that would be the upset. Bigger. Would it be bigger than Cleveland coming back 3-1 in the finals?
Yes.
Just because it's the Utah Jazz.
Right, and nobody would expect the 5 seed to upset the best team in basketball.
Yeah, so I can't see Golden State not making it.
It's going to be Golden State Houston.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning to Houston just because I just want to see a different team.
Well, San Antonio did fall last year. They didn't make it to the conference finals. It was OKC last year.
Damn, you foiled my plans again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. So you have Boston, Cleveland, and Golden State, Houston, right?
Yep.
All right, I'm going to go with then Golden State and San Antonio. Just be different.
I know. So there's that. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, yeah, the Stanley Cup playoffs are going on.
And boy, do we have some series there.
Yes, we do. Let's see, for the fact that...
I am surprised at how insane Nashville is.
Oh, that's been my favorite series to watch of all of them, honestly.
I know. And also the stupidity that some Blues fans have against P.K. Subban.
Meaning what?
There's like some stupid racial things.
As if we didn't have enough of that with the Adam Jones story to start the show.
It's the same type of shtick. I mean, you know, not throwing peanuts at him, but just because.
It also goes
in like with some of the commentators. Like if you heard about Mike Milbury saying something.
No surprise. That's Mike Milbury.
Yeah, I know. Like,
he's an idiot.
Exactly.
How Mike Milbury still has a TV job or is working in the NHL right now with all the stupid stuff he's done is beyond me.
I believe it was over talking about warm-ups and how Subban's a little bit, loosey-goosey and just having fun during warm-ups.
That's what you're supposed to do during warm-ups.
Yeah.
It's just to get you loose and ready to play hockey.
Yeah. I don't get it. It's just Milbury talking from a bygone era where that type of hockey or style of hockey doesn't exist. He's coming from an era of hockey where you can go into the stands and hit people with shoes.
Yep.
So that's the guy that's telling people that whatever Subban does is not the way to do hockey and yada, yada, yada.
Now, if that was coming from, say, Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux, it would carry a little more weight.
I would hold more weight to someone that retired within like few years ago, like Mark Recchi.
Right, or Steve Yzerman, let's say.
Yeah, Steve Yzerman, yes.
And neither one of them are dumb enough to say anything like that.
Exactly.
So,
but of course, Steve Yzerman is a GM. How can he have time to do that in the broadcast booth?
Exactly, when he's too busy trying to build that Stanley Cup contending team down in Tampa.
But I'm always surprised at how insane the Nashville crowd is, though, for their Predators.
They're nuts.
I know that didn't sound weird at all.
Yeah, it's perfectly understandable.
No, it sounded weird for their Predators.
Yeah.
And, thank you. If you took that out of context, then it sounds very awkward.
Yeah, and if you were crazy enough to take it out of context, there's something wrong on your end, not ours.
I'm crazy because I thought of it.
I know.
But Nashville is crazy for hockey.
Yes, they are, which is surprising considering it's a southern state.
It is a southern state, and they just love their team. It's amazing.
Which shows the power that that sports can have people.
It's amazing. No, it shows how a dedicated franchise can build up a fan base.
Unlike those in Atlanta, because they failed twice already.
Or, Phoenix to some degree. I mean, yeah, you do have some very dedicated fans. I mean, Austin Matthews, the number one pick overall in the last year's draft, was born in Arizona.
Yep.
And if he wasn't a Coyotes fan, he wouldn't be playing hockey.
And there's no way to tell if the Leafs would have made the playoffs this year without Austin Matthews.
Yes. But I'm surprised with this Nashville Blues series. I still think Nashville is just too overpowered.
Yeah, I still think I had the Preds taking it, I think, in six.
Yeah.
That was my original prediction.
Yeah, I mean, the Blues is definitely a very high-octane team also with Tarasenko and just their weapons.
Yeah, they've got Jake Allen, to his credit, has stood on his head in a couple of instances in this series. At times, he hasn't gotten the offensive support. Had it in game two when the Blues pulled out the 3-2 win. Thanks to a pair of goals from Vladimir Tarasenko, who decided to show up. But let's see. Nashville had a lead in game one, blew it, ended up winning late. The Blues dominated game two. Nashville dominated game three.
I still say it's Nashville's series to win.
Yeah.
They still have the home ice advantage. They need two wins, and the next three games, two of them are in Nashville, of this recording.
Yep.
So the puck is still in Nashville zone.
Yep.
As you want to say in that reference.
Yeah.
And it's just probably one of the more intense series that you'll see coming from this second round besides Pittsburgh and Washington.
We'll get to that in a second, though. There's one other crazy crowd I want to bring up, and that's at Rogers Place in Edmonton, yeah.
That team does not know how. It's like the inexperienced team that's just too stupid to know what position they're in terms of
5-3 win in game one, 2-1 win.
You get what I'm trying
to say,
right?
Yeah, they're not smart enough to know they're dumb and to go away already.
Yeah.
The last time Edmonton made the playoffs, they did the same thing. 2006 went all the way to the finals. They were a low seed that year in the playoffs.
I think they were the 8th seed.
I think so. They didn't know any better, and they ended up beating up on they took Carolina to 7 games that year.
I think it was like 8 or 6, I want to say.
Yeah, I'm double-checking that now.
But yeah, they're a team that refuses to give up despite having a team full of young talent and making it to the playoffs for the first time.
Led by a guy who's probably
the Hart finalist.
Yep.
Not probably, he is a Hart finalist.
No, he said he's got a solid chance to walk away with the Hart Trophy, and that being Connor McDavid. The leading scorer
in the
NHL.
That goal that he did, even though I believe they lost that game, though.
And by the way, the Oilers that year that went to the finals, they were an 8 seed.
8 seed, okay. So they were up 2-1, I believe, 2-0,
yep,
going into Edmonton.
But,
and boy, that goal that Connor McDavid did to really light things up.
Yep,
God, just stops on a dime by the blue line, fakes the defenseman, and just
rips
a few steps and rips it on the far side. Oh, God.
And you and I got to see him play in person a couple of years ago at Barclays Center.
Yeah, we did. Good for us.
But if you don't believe that the crowd in Edmonton is awesome.
They were starving.
Well, no, it's not only that, but hello, singing the national anthem before game three.
Yeah, that's very respectful.
Very classy. It's cool. You don't see that in other sports where the crowd will just take the national anthem. The mic died right before they started singing the Star-Spangled Banner. The anthem singer just said, to hell with it. The crowd took it. The crowd sang it word for word all the way through, start to finish. And I've seen them do it for O Canada a couple of times, but doing it for the Star-Spangled Banner too, that's impressive.
I'm surprised they know the words.
I'm not. They have to play it before every game. You know that. I'm sure if you hear it 41 times a year, plus however many playoff games you get, and with the number of games that are also showed across Canada on CBC and TSN, you figured they would pick it up.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's still surprising. It's just, that's just my thought.
I know. So now you want to go back to the other crazy series? Look at the chippiness.
I don't know what else to say about this Edmonton. Since it's, you know, West Coast, it's too late for me to really notice it.
Yeah. That's the only thing that sucks about it. That's the only series I haven't been able to really watch because it usually starts as late as it does.
I know.
With the exception of Sunday night, which was a 7 o'clock start.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's talk about the gruesome series that happened. Well, game three happened.
Ugh. Sidney Crosby gets cross-checked by Niskanen, and a lot of people are calling for Niskanen's head, and that he should have been suspended. I don't know about that.
I heard that the cross-check, like, it wasn't like a straight-up like cross-check. Like, I think two or, like, both of them were falling, and it was kind of an awkward type of thing.
It was. Now, if it had been Crosby skating like normal and getting cross-checked in the head.
Or cross-check or blindsided. But
exactly.
Like this... I didn't see it, but...
I did.
Okay, so it was like an awkward
It was extremely awkward. Crosby had lost his balance. He was going... It happened around the goal line. Crosby got knocked down. He was going down already. And Niskanen, I think, who was off balance on his own right, his stick just landed in the wrong spot. And it just looked really bad.
Okay.
I mean, he ended up getting a 5-minute major penalty for it and a game misconduct. So Niskanen got tossed completely.
Yeah,
thrown out of the hockey game.
I mean, I guess that could be harsh as well. But I think the Pittsburgh crowd at that game would probably storm the ice and rip off some heads.
And not only that, but because it was Sidney Crosby, the face of the league.
Especially that reason.
Yeah. But, again, if it had been what most hockey fans would consider a normal body check where both guys are on their feet and they're upright, and it had been just a straight cross-check to the head while both guys are skating normally, okay, suspendable offense, yes. But for the fact that it just looked awkward and Crosby was going down already and he got hit, and because it's Sidney Crosby, Niskanen got tossed, and a lot of fans in Pittsburgh were pissed off at it.
Yeah, but you know what? They got to take care of business. They have a 2-1 lead going into after last night's loss.
Thank you, Kevin Shattenkirk, for actually showing up in overtime.
Yes, because now we have a series.
But that showed the resilience, though, of Pittsburgh, because Washington was up 2-0.
Yeah, that's right. They scored within, like, 48 seconds
They scored
of each
48
other.
Seconds apart in the final 2 minutes of regulation.
Screw Pittsburgh.
I know.
How they always
The Penguins are to hockey what the Pats are to the NFL. Everybody hates them.
And don't remind me that our conference, the Metropolitan Division, is going to get stronger with the Devils winning the draft, and Philadelphia gets number 2.
Yep. And the Islanders have the 15th pick, but that's...
Yeah. Don't remind me that the toughest conference, toughest division in the league is going to get tougher.
And look at the top four teams that got into the playoffs. They all had the same thing. They all finished with 100 points or higher.
God.
As if the Metro wasn't tough enough, guess what? Only going to get tougher.
Yeah. Now, I thought this, like, since Washington lost their first two games at home, that you knew that was going to be dread for Washington. So that was a big, big win for Washington.
They had to come up with something, and the guy who was brought in at the trade deadline and expected to be sort of the guy to help Washington get over that hump finally showed up. Kevin Shattenkirk had been quiet for most of the playoffs. Scores the big goal in Game 3. Now, one of two things is going to happen when they meet up tomorrow night, May 3rd, for Game 3. Or for Game 4, rather. It's either Washington's going to take that momentum and keep right on rolling with it. I had the Caps winning this series because I had this innate feeling that this might be the year they get over the hump. Or Pittsburgh could reestablish themselves and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're the defending Stanley Cup champions. We're the Pittsburgh Penguins. Screw you guys. Get the hell out of here.
Yep. Again, Pittsburgh still has the advantage. We'll see if Washington can break and tie the series.
But you got to give credit, though, where it's due to Marc-Andre Fleury.
Oh, I'm surprised that he's showed up in the playoffs.
I know, because with the exception of like 2 good years, 08 and 09, Fleury's turtled in the playoffs.
Yes.
And that's being nice, but he's had no choice because Matt Murray got hurt in warm-ups of game one against Columbus in the opening round. Matt Murray hasn't played a minute all playoffs. It's been all Marc-Andre Fleury, and he's been fascinating. He's been phenomenal.
Yeah, just...
I know, it's the Penguins, I know.
I'm done with the Penguins.
But you want to talk phenomenal performances in the playoffs? Look at game two in Ottawa. Jean-Gabriel Pageau, 4 goals, including a natural hat trick to win the game.
Now, unlike the pressure that the Capitals have to face, you know, when they lost their first 2 games at home, Ottawa won their first 2 games at home in their series against the Rangers, and now the Rangers have to hold service.
And they have to go back.
And win both 2 games at home. Because it's not... The only way that the series will be gone is when you lose a game... For this series, when you lose a game on home ice.
Right.
So the Rangers need to keep on playing the game, not get chippy, not in terms of not making penalties and stuff. But some people are saying that the Rangers should try to break away from that, like, you know, just only play whistle to whistle and maybe extend a little chippiness after the whistle's blown, but that's not the Rangers style, just like Alain Vigneault's style back in 2011 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And look what happened there. They lost the Stanley Cup Finals in Game 7 because of it. So,
what year?
2011.
2012 they lost in the finals. He did that with Vancouver in 2011.
That's what I said.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks, Matt.
Sorry. I know. It's facing me.
Wrong!
Okay.
Okay, so...
Anyway.
So here's a question for the Rangers. Do you still go with the game plan of playing whistle to whistle? Or do you, when the whistle is blown, get a little chippy?
Well...
Because right now, it's a very important game for the Rangers. If they lose this game, it's going to be a very tough hole to climb out of.
I mean, there's only a couple of teams in the history of hockey
besides that. Yes.
And I don't know. I honestly don't know if the Rangers have the thoroughbreds to be able to do this in this round. Because Henrik Lundqvist, to his credit, has stood on his head.
I will not blame Lundqvist if this series is...
I blame the defense for being spotty at times in front of Hank. And I blame some of the forwards for not producing. It's common sense.
I mean, the thing is that you had 2 shorthanded goals. You had a 2-goal lead for 3 straight occurrences in game 2. You were probably the better team. And yet somehow you let Pageau score 4 goals on you, one of them being the game winner. Before that was a natural hat trick.
That's actually what capped off the natural hat trick.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the third goal is
Silly
what capped
me.
It off. Yeah,
More like I forgot, actually.
Yeah, no, Pageau got them
too
back.
Too many things to think about.
I know, Pageau scored twice in a span of 17 seconds. He scored at 18:41 of the third to cut the lead to 1. Tied the game at 18:58 of the third period. He tied it with 1:02 left in regulation. And then he scored on a gorgeous shot in double overtime to win the game. Like, he started the scoring. The Rangers took the lead.
No, I get it.
Yeah, so...
So, I say that's just a case of bad luck and also bad defense and bad management.
Right.
Where I believe if Steve was here, he would say about how Alain Vigneault is just somehow has this whole prevent D type of defense in the third quarter. What the hell's wrong with me? Third period, yeah. Why? I don't know. It's just like the whole thing. You get the 2-goal lead and you just... Basically, let the offense...
Keep going.
That's what you think. Let the offense keep going. But it's like, no. Let's just pull back. Let's just, you know, play some solid defense and just chip the puck. Once you go past the red line, chip it in. Don't worry about it.
Dump and chase doesn't always work. I mean...
Dump and chase, but like if you don't really see the issue, just go back. Let's get ready for the next assault.
Kind of think of what happened with round one with Montreal and that... The Rangers tried to get away. What worked most of the year for the Rangers was using their foot speed and rolling 4 lines. And that worked with solid effectiveness most of the year. And that worked in the latter half of the Montreal series, which is why the Rangers are now playing Ottawa, and it's not an all-Canada matchup in this round. But the Rangers seem to try to change their style to match Ottawa. Don't do that. If you know your speed worked against Montreal in the opening round, stick Stick with your guns. Stick with what brought you to the dance. I know this is a...
I honestly think that Alain Vigneault should get rid of his pre-vent D.
And just play hockey.
Well, no, you're playing hockey both ways.
Yeah, I know.
I say, whatever worked in the first 50 minutes of that game, keep it up.
Yeah.
Keep on putting pressure on them, even when there's 5 minutes left. Give them no breathing room to go down 200 feet the other way and put pressure in the offensive zone, and then you're getting tired players over and over again that might give you stupid penalties and have Erik Karlsson just rip one on a power play.
Which is what Karlsson does best, which is why I said he was going to be an X-factor in the series. And he has been.
And one thing is also keep on checking Karlsson.
And Carlson's been playing, mind you, with a broken heel, pretty much.
Yeah, so keep on checking him, keep on getting him weak during the out.
Throw him off his game.
Yeah, throw him off. It might not work. I don't know if they've been doing that consistently during the first two games.
They haven't. Game three.
And that's the problem.
And game three is going on.
You know he's the best player. Let him get weak as his series progresses.
Exactly. And as soon as he starts breaking down, the rest of the Senators break down. Go back to what brought you. The four-line thing will work.
Exactly.
Again, easier said than done. I realize
I know it's easier
that.
Said than done. But I mean, that's why I've heard people say bring him back Tanner Glass back in the lineup. But then when you bring up Tanner Glass, you're not rolling four lines. You're rolling three lines and a Tanner Glass line.
Yeah. Which means you got to take out somebody like Pavel Buchnevich, who could be a huge factor in this series.
Exactly.
Which, again, common sense would dictate it here to keep Buchnevich in. But who the hell knows what's going through the mind of AV? If we knew what was going through AV's mind, we'd have him on the show. I'd like to get him on, but certain things are beyond our control.
Yeah, que sera, sera indeed.
Exactly. And speaking of certain things that are beyond our control, why is it that whenever things seem to start, like, they might be going right for the New York Mets, they never do?
You know what, Matt?
What?
We'll just do that in a lightning round now, shall we?
What, you want to save the Mets for later? Okay, fine.
You mean now.
Right, let's go to the lightning round. It's now time for the Sully and Steve on Sports Lightning Round. And I don't know what it is, but the Mets players always seem to find a propensity and a way to get hurt at the worst times.
I don't get it at all. Is it the doctors or... I know that there's a whole running joke with the Mets doctors, but is there a point when you just need to stop blaming the doctors and just... You can't
I think
not assign blame to anyone because injuries happen and somehow the Mets are just enriched with a horrible injury history?
I think in this case it's more on Thor than it is on the Mets doctors or the Mets management because they had asked him when they scratched him from his last start before getting hurt on Sunday in the blowout loss to Washington. The Mets doctors had said to him, why don't you get an MRI? Thor basically said no.
But now there's a thing where management can force you to get an MRI. So why did management force Thor to get an MRI? You know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I mean...
You have the ability to say to Syndergaard, no, you're listening to us.
Get your MRI done.
You're going in that tube to get an MRI. So it's like, who is running the team? Is it management or is it actually the players doing what they want and somehow management just doesn't care? And this is what happens. They told Syndergaard not to gain weight this offseason.
He did.
What does he do? He bulks up muscle. And someone proficient in baseball, I'm trying to remember the name, but I can't, said...
He could throw up
the way, no, the way that Syndergaard did, because he didn't throw at all. He just bulked up and not throw, that he was going to get injured by June 1st.
Yeah.
He got injured on April 30th.
Yep. Because it throws off your... Because adding muscle could completely throw off your mechanics, and it apparently did. Because that's partially why Thor got hurt, I think.
Well, the problem is now is that he has a tear in his lat.
Yeah, and he could...
Not related to the bicep, so if you want to have a silver lining, that's your silver lining.
Yeah, but Thor's going to be out in weeks
probably,
instead of days.
Probably before the All-Star break is what you've heard, because Steven Matz had the same issue. It took about 2 months. We're in May 2nd right now, and if you think it's going to be that long, maybe longer, if you have any missteps, you expect him to be back by the All-Star break.
And this is one of the strong suits that the Mets were supposed to have was their pitching depth at the start of the year. But
Matz isn't still there.
Yep, Lugo's hurt. Harvey's off his game. Thor's hurt. Gazelman put in a strong performance against the Braves last night. But that's not saying a whole lot.
And I heard this debate as well. It's like, since there is a whole pitch count thing up to 100 pitches, listen to this. I'm just saying in general. Not because, you know, the whole Mets thing, like number innings limit and pitch counts.
This is across baseball.
Across baseball.
Okay.
Now there's been more focus on the pitch limit. Do you think that younger pitchers are now thinking about just waste throwing all that they can have into their 100 pitches because they know that's all they're going to have? Whereas back then, you really didn't have that limit, and you had to like keep on keeping your arm in check by not throwing as hard as you can.
Right. It shouldn't be the quantity of the pitches. It should be quality pitches. Or, I mean, look.
No, because both of them is quantity, but it's like, I'd say
if you're having a good start, let it go. Don't cut them off.
But the thing is that they're in their minds thinking, oh, it doesn't matter if I have a good start. I have 100 pitches in me. Let me just empty the tank on that thing.
No, you go until you feel like you're starting to get rocked. Then we'll take you out.
That's the whole thing. Like, if your head is, you're not following me here, Matt.
Okay.
When you have 100 pitches or so, you keep on throwing as hard as you can or as tough as you can.
Which to me is stupid.
And then by the time 100 pitches goes on, then you're done because that's what happens. The thing is that go for the long run. Learn. These pitchers need to stop thinking about the sexy 100-mile-an-hour pitching thing
and
worry about pitching. When you're jamming, pitching amazing with great quality pitches overall.
Exactly.
You can, you know, well, you ramp up that 99-mile-per-hour fastball by someone.
It shouldn't be throwing hard. It should be locating your pitches. Why do you think R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon, who are both in their mid-40s, are still pitching as well as they are?
Well, R.A. Dickey's because he has that knuckleball. That's its own little thing.
Yeah, but look at Colon.
That's like the least amount of arm motion and stress.
But look at Colon, though. Bartolo Colon has made his career off of throwing in the low 90s at his hardest, but he's got great command of his pitches, which is why he's still pitching at 44.
When he needs to go to his mid-90s, he can do it.
Right. So that's why guys like Bartolo Colon have had extended careers. Bartolo Colon outlasted a major league ballpark, for God's sake.
I know, right? He outlasted
Turner Field.
Yeah.
And he's now pitching in SunTrust Park.
Go figure, right?
So that shows Bartolo Colon is the perfect example of how to be able to pitch in the major leagues. Don't worry about throwing Thor-style gas. Get the ball over the plate. Get guys to swing in the dirty, bad pitches. Get command of your pitches, and your career will last a lot longer than throwing straight gas.
You know you have those filthy pitches, but save them for when you really need it.
Right. And that's the only way you can do it. And on that note, we have run out of time for this episode of the show. I'd like to remind everybody again, you can follow us on various forms of social media. Facebook.com/SollySteveOnSports. Twitter at @S_S_Sports. Or use the #SollySteve. Either way works. At both Facebook and Twitter, you can get all your updates on the sports world. Get all your updates on this very show. And keep your eyes and ears peeled for mini rants, which I will try to get out to you as often as I possibly can. With hopefully a little help from Steve and Dan if they actually decide to do one. Which is going to be a rarity in this case. But we've got that. We've got the sports blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com. We've got all the latest episodes of the show are on iTunes. Everything we've ever done is on SoundCloud. Just search Sully and Steve on Sports, hit download, and you can take the show with you wherever you go. And if you have any questions, concerns, comments, or whatever you don't want to leave on social media, fine with us. Email us if we can get the password from Brendan, sullysteveonsports@gmail.com. For everybody working hard behind the scenes, and for Jeff, I'm Sally. We'll be back with Steve and Dan next week.